The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And we'll be talking later in the hour about a concert tonight in Champaign by Concerto Urbano, which is the early music ensemble based at the University of Illinois. John Cox, one of the organizers of that of this concert, is going to be with us to share some music. And in the first part, most of the hour, will be a conversation with the two members of the duo called Acoustic Eidolon. They are Joe Scott and Hannah Alkire. Hannah plays cello, and Joe plays this interesting instrument, apparently unique, called the double-necked gitjo. And you'll have to stick around to hear what that's all about. We'll be hearing some of their music, including right now. I should also say that the reason they're on the show is they're going to be doing a program on the music series at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute at the Carl Clinic on the University Avenue in Urbana. They have a free short program every Thursday at noon, pretty much throughout the year. And Acoustic Eidolon is this week's ensemble. Hope you can stick around. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
just heard a tune called Rio del Fuego, which means River of Fire, which is the title track from a CD by the duo known as Acoustic Eidolon. They are going to be playing Thursday at noon on the music series at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the main Carle Clinic campus in Urbana. And both members of the duo, who are a husband and wife team, are with me on the phone right now here on Live and Local. They are Joe Scott and Hannah Alkire. And Hannah is the cellist. And just to shorten things a bit, Joe is the Git Joe player. But
right.
Both of them do a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And I heard about you all from Barbara Hedlund, who coordinates the music series at the Mills Institute. And how did you get to know her?
Well, she's a fellow cellist, and so we've our paths have crossed, then, you know, over the years and years ago, and so we've kept in touch, and it's wonderful to have colleagues around the country with so much, you know, sort of mutual respect for what we're doing, and she's terrific.
Are cellists sort of a closed world? That's not really what I mean, but, you know, a close-knit society.
There's. I think you get a little clicky within your instrument, and cello more so than perhaps violinists, just because they're fewer of us. You know, you got to stick together. When you find a fellow cellist, it's like, oh, wow, you know, especially one really playing a lot and doing it, you know.
And where does the name of the group come from? I actually looked up Eidolon on Wikipedia.
Yes.
And I'm quoting here, image, idol, double, apparition, phantom, or ghost.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that we never saw that definition back 12 years ago when we took the name. Our rendition in our dictionary said an ideal or a visual image. And then as the years went on, we got many more definitions for it. But we really liked the sound of the word, and we wanted, because our music is very diverse, everything from flamenco to Celtic and world music, we wanted some kind of a word that wasn't defined, you know, that could be anything in a way, you know. And so we just kind of really liked it. So.
And did you, once you learned these other definitions, did that sort of expand the meaning in your mind, or have you just sort of dismissed it?
Well, we were a little mortified at first, because we actually found out after we had trademarked the name and took it and just named ourselves just Eidolon, not the acoustic part yet, we found out there's actually another band called Eidolon that's like a death metal thrash.
Oh.
You know, like seriously dark stuff. And we had a couple of really concerned fans say, wow, I just bought your CD, and whoa, are you guys okay? You know? But they've gotten the other one. So we changed the name to Acoustic Eidolon and tried to keep the lighter, you know, definition of it going. So
I see here that Edgar Allan Poe used that term in a poem of his called Dreamland.
Oh, yeah. One of our fans brought us to that. I used to read Edgar Allan Poe a ton, and I hadn't found that one. So it was cool to discover it in use. I had never heard the word before.
And for anybody who wants to look it up, it's spelled Eidolon, Eidolon, Acoustic Eidolon. In this case, two folks, although on both of the CDs we're going to sample today, you do have some friends who join you in the case of the one we just heard. You've got a couple of percussionists, one of whom, Joe, I gather you're closely related to?
Yes. On my son Alex actually did a little bit of percussion on the CD and a little bit of bass work on it, and that's... that's Alex. And then another guy, Christian Teal, wonderful percussionist here in the Colorado region. And, typically on our recordings, we do most of it. I do all the string stuff and synth stuff, and Hannah does the cellos, and we do the vocals, and then we do have a few. And then on our Friends Across the Ocean CD, it actually is a colleague of ours that we tour Europe with every year, a wonderful Celtic harpist from Berlin, Germany. His name is Thomas Lofka. And so that's our ninth CD, and it's the first time we've actually done something with another artist. So typically we tend to be pretty self-contained. So,
well, since you've mentioned him, why don't we just sort of skip over to that CD called Friends Across the Ocean with Thomas Lefke. Don't hear about too many Celtic harpists from Germany.
Yeah.
It's true, and it's so interesting. When we met him, he learned his English in Ireland and spent he grew up there and spent years there and learned the Celtic harp there, and And so he speaks English with an Irish accent. And he had us completely fooled. We were positive he was Irish. And then he said, no, I live in Berlin. I grew up, you know, I was born in the Black Forest before heading to Ireland. So, yeah, so he's actually of German heritage. And it cracked us up because we thought, wow, you're right. You don't hear of that too often.
No, well, we're going to hear him. And, of course, in this case, you don't hear any kind of accent at all. You just hear the music. How about if we do Calling of the Moor? This one has some very nice lyrics to it. This is your joint composition.
Well, actually, no, it's our acoustic guide-along composition, but Thomas just joins us on his harp for the...
Well, that's what I meant,
jointly
between
the
two of you,
because
some of the songs are credited to one or the other.
Exactly.
And so it's acoustic guide-along, Joe Scott. And what are you playing on this one, Joe, do you recall?
Oh, let's see, acoustic guitar and penny whistle and... mandolin and a little instrument called a papoose and some guitar synths.
Yeah, what is a papoose? I saw that.
It's made by Tacoma here in the States, and it's just like a guitar, a miniature guitar. It's acoustic, has an amazing sound. It almost sounds at times like a mandolin. But it's just a half-size guitar. It just has a wonderful, very different sound. So.
And Hannah, you're exclusively on cello on this one.
Yeah, it's actually the source of the joke in our household is that Joe can play anything, you know. And then there's Hannah, and she's playing the cello.
Well, now you're listed here as an accordion player also.
You're right. That was my little deep, dark secret that I had to air just so that I could get my name behind some other instrument. And I, at one point on an early CD, I made a brief cameo on wind chimes, and that was pretty exciting.
Well, but yeah, no, I would think so.
I stick to the cello.
It's called Calling of the Moor from the CD Friends Across the Ocean by Acoustic Eidolon with Celtic harpist Thomas Lefke. They're going to be, not with Thomas, but just the duo, at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the Music Series, a free program for about an hour on Thursday at noon. And you're listening to them here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Mountain, I'm the one who battled the sea. I'm the one who tamed the thunder. Now I call out to thee. You are the one who brings the dawn. You are the one who calms the sea. You are the one who gives me hope. And your touch has set me free.
He calls out to me, but I bend with the wind. My soul wanders free. Still he calls me again. His strength is vast, and his hand reaches far. Though my heart sings along, still he calls me again.
Mountain, I am the one who battled the sea. I am the one who tamed the thunder. Now I call out to thee. You
are the one who brings the dawn. You are the one who calms the sea. You are the one who gives me hope, and your touch has set me free.
He calls out to me, but I bend with the wind. My soul wanders free, still he calls me again. His strength, it is vast, and his hand reaches far. Though my heart sings alone, still he calls me again.
It's called Calling of the Moor by Joe Scott and Hannah Alkire, who together are Acoustic Eidolon, and they were joined by Celtic harpist Thomas Lefke, a good friend of theirs, hence the name of the CD, Friends Across the Ocean, and they're performing at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute Music Series Thursday at noon in Urbana, and they're with us here on Live and Local. How did you get started as a duo? I noticed from your publicity material that you did have a musical relationship before you formed your marital relationship.
Yes, yeah. We did.
We did. We just I had a recording studio here in the Colorado, north of Boulder, and doing a lot of different recordings for various people in the region here. And I was doing recording a group from Boulder, CD, and they wanted cello, and they informed me they were going to bring in a cellist, which was wonderful, and that happened to be Hannah, and you can take the story from there, Hannah.
Well, it was funny, they were giving me directions from Boulder, because I lived way north of Boulder and west and outside, kind of the middle of nowhere, you know, so I told them, just give me directions from where you are, and I'll find it, you know, I'll translate it, and so they did, and they were coming towards me, and then turning down my country road, and then they turned down my street, and it turned out that across the street from me and three farmhouses away was Joe. And that was his studio. So we were neighbors on top of it and had no idea.
Yeah.
So so he had me into play on a lot of sessions after that once he realized, and I was right there, and, you know, it was very convenient.
It was great. And that was in 95, and then in 98 I had always in the back of my mind wanted to hear, that I loved the cello and wanted to hear it with this crazy guitar that I designed, the double neck guitar, Joe. And so we got together February of 98, and for the very first time at Hannah's house, and we just loved the sound. It was a really cool combination, the percussiveness of the guitar against the more, openness of the cello, and it was very cool. We just immediately thought, this is really cool. We need to explore this and see where it takes us. And yeah, for the first couple years, we were just friends and business partners, and then we fell in love. And now we got married. We've been married about just over 9.5 years. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we've been Acoustic Eidolon for, this is our 13th year. So, it's a good set. It's a happy history, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
So tell me about this double-necked git, Joe. I'm looking at a picture of it,
mm-hmm.
And it just looks like this. It almost looks like you're looking at a guitar. Well, a sort of a guitar, while crossing your eyes.
That's how it feels, too, when you play it. No, that was in 1991. I had the idea to build a custom double-neck guitar, and then I had it built by a professional builder, luthier, and the bottom neck is strung first like a 5-string banjo, but then I had him add 2 additional treble strings, hence those 7 strings, and because I also played 5-string banjo as well as guitar, and I wanted to be able to do banjo-type stuff on a guitar. The upper neck is strung like a traditional guitar, but with an additional bass string, so it has 7 strings as well. And then I've just developed this technique where I play a lot of bass notes and chords with my left hand on the guitar neck by plucking and hammering and whatever it takes to get the notes I hear. And then at the same time, I play melody notes with my right hand on the bottom neck, which is strung more like a banjo. And then that's hence the name Git Joe, half guitar, half banjo. So it's my own thing. You won't see it anywhere else, really. You'll see other double necks, but they'll be like a traditional 6-string and a 12-string. And but this particular instrument, the way it's designed, the way I play it, is unique to me and to Acoustic Eidolon.
And is that when you went to your luthier, did you say, I want an instrument that nobody else has?
Well, you know, in a, yeah. But I mean, I told him what I wanted as far as the stringing configuration, then he made it a reality. And I basically, because I compose a lot of music, after many years of composing on traditional guitar, it becomes trickier and trickier to write stuff that hasn't totally been done before. Everything I would do, it's like, geez, I've heard that 1,000 times or something like that. With this instrument, it doesn't even, it sounds so unique. It has its own voice, so it's inspired me to do way more composing and do things I could have never done on a traditional guitar. So it's just like creating my own voice. And in today's world, it's harder and harder to be an individual or unique or, you know, and to find your own sound or your own voice is really important if you want to, you know, make it or, you know, differentiate yourself from all the other acoustic music acts out there. So I think the combination of the cello and this crazy guitar really helps us create our own sound.
Well, on your... You list one of the definitions for yourselves of Acoustic Eidolon as the world's premier Gitjo cello duo. And I wonder if there are any other Gitjo cello duos
there
that you
not.
Know about.
The Gitjo is, you know, completely unique. But there are two other U.S.-based guitar cello duos out there that we are, you know, on the circuit with. And but it's interesting. It's still a pretty rare combination, and it's a wonderful combination. So... I'm sure, you know, we'll see more over the years. You never know.
So it's pretty easy for you to say you're the premier such duo if
yeah.
you're the only such
duo. We're the only ones.
That's
exactly.
As far as
very
you know.
Much
a tongue-in-cheek. yeah.
Yep.
It's like I'm the world's greatest double-neck Gitjo player.
Fair enough.
I can say that and not even sound arrogant because I am the only one. So
well,
I
you
hope
may...
someone wants to do it. And, you know, I can do this for many more years yet, but someday someone will have to take over the mantle there, the... take the lead and keep it going for me.
Well, of course, if somebody decides to have one of these instruments made for them while you're still playing, then you're going to have a debate or a playoff or something
no,
like that.
No, they'll just need to take lessons, that's all.
Oh, there you go.
It takes a while.
Well,
to
a lot of people always say, you should patent this, and it's like, no, because it doesn't stop anybody from building it, that anybody can do anything they want. I've been recording on this instrument since 91, and there's like R9 CDs plus about another 12 or 13 CDs that dates back to then. So if there's ever any question on who did it first, I think I can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. So,
yep.
But it was really cool. We were playing, we've started playing concerts with symphony orchestras as well around the U.S., and we've got one overseas this fall coming up, and it's been this really great thing, and for me, especially coming from the classical world, to kind of step back into that world, but with our music, is a real thrill, you know, a real treat. And after one of the concerts, we'd done some workshops and sessions in the schools earlier that week or day or something, and so a bunch of the students were there at the concert, and this one young girl came up to me afterwards, and she goes, my name's Hannah, and I play the cello, and I am going to spend the rest of my years looking for a double-neck Gitjo player. It was so sweet. I told her, you do that, because eventually, I mean, you know, we're talking years, but eventually we'll have to pass the torch, you know.
That's right. Well, and really cool. Did you tell her that if she finds one, she has to marry him?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, I did point that out, that, yeah. You know, be sure you like him, because...
That's the way it goes. It's the rule.
That's right.
Well, let's hear another example of your playing. How about we skip back to the River of Fire CD for this rather haunting opening tune here called Casa de la Memoria, which means House of Memories. And this is another joint composition between the two of you, which actually just raises a quick question before we hear it.
Yeah.
When you do write something jointly, as opposed to, you know, one's written by one of you or by the other, what's the process? If there's a standard process?
It varies. I mean, Joe is definitely the primary composer in our duo, and I'm much newer to the writing process, and so it's kind of evolved. He's come alongside me to help me to co-write stuff, even just to get me writing, you know. And so a lot of times it will be that, you know, traditionally Joe with the guitar will come up with this chord progression that he just loves. And if he doesn't have a melody that came with it in his head, then the cello as the melodic line instrument is the natural one to then find that melody. And so a lot of the co-writing, like Casa, is a great example, where Joe came up with the underpinnings and the movement and the arrangement of it, and then, you know, I worked out the melodies, to, and then we co-write melodies as well. And, I mean, it's so interesting because our lives have completely over the years intertwined, you know, being married and being together all the time and touring and then writing and then recording. I mean, every aspect of our lives is completely 100% together. And it's been interesting to see the writing process evolve, where it's this kind of flow back and forth. And by the end of it, it's actually hard to remember sometimes, you know, which line, you know, which side of the lines were we on? Who wrote that? You know, that particular part of it or whatever. But so it's an extremely fulfilling process.
It's Casa de la Memoria, played here by Acoustic Eidolon from their CD called River of Fire, here on Live and Local. They're going to be playing at on the music series at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute at Carle Clinic in Urbana, Thursday at noon. That was called Casa de la Memoria, House of Memories, the opening track from the CD River of Fire by Acoustic Eidolon. The duo are cellist Hannah Alkier and Gitjo player and multi-instrumentalist Joe Scott. They co-wrote that tune, and you can hear them perform at noon on Thursday at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the main Carl Clinic campus on University Avenue in Urbana. They're with me now, both of them, here on Live and Local by the telephone from Colorado, at least the time that we're recording this conversation. And I understand, Hannah, that there's kind of a connection for you to this particular institution, and that you're yourself a cancer survivor.
I am, yeah. And it just makes any, you know, any of the causes or places that are for cancer awareness and cancer research, it makes it very near and dear to our heart. It was back in the, I went through my round with it in the first year of Acoustic Eidolon, and so it was a really, it was such an interesting time because, you know, we had just signed a record deal, we just launched this career, we were recording our first CD, you know, it was all these doors opening, and then I got the diagnosis. And so it made for a really scary year, but one that I have become very strangely grateful for, because of all the ways that it just left me in this place where I appreciate every day, and I'm just passionate about, you know, playing for breast cancer awareness things. Mine, it was actually a different kind, but it just doesn't matter. I mean, we just have to kind of find ways to combat the stuff, you know?
You know, I've always wondered, or at least often wondered, when somebody says that once they face the prospect of death, that they start to think about life differently and live each day to the fullest and so on. And I always wonder, does that wear off after a while?
You know, it doesn't. And I think that's why it becomes this, it's a permanently changed piece that you move forward with that doesn't ebb and flow like everything else does, you know, in your life. It just stays completely solidly, you know, I've chosen, it's kind of the life after death idea, you know, like I got this second chance, I am fighting for this one, I'm going to live it fully, you know, it's like it really brings you back to life, and yeah, it doesn't go away.
Well, that's good, and of course the musical collaboration has certainly not gone away either.
No.
for the two of you by any stretch. And Hannah, furthermore, I understand you're from our community.
Yes, I grew up in Champaign and went through all the schools there and went through the university and got a degree to teach foreign languages back then, because the cello was my passion, but I decided to keep it at that time of my life a more personal passion. And so I then went back through some of the schools that I had been to and then taught for the first year after college. So I had a good long legacy, a good run of Champaign.
And when did the switch from passion to vocation happen?
It was always, well, it was, and it's still passion, so that's been a baseline. But it switched to vocation. I taught high school until the year that I had my son, and he's 14 this year. And I just figured, you know, I'm playing in three different bands. I'm playing every night of the week and teaching every day of the week. And I just thought this is a really good transition point when I was pregnant to just see if I could step on the foot that was holding the music and let go of the teaching part and see if it would carry me. And within a short amount of time, I had met Joe, and it's like, oh, okay, now I'm in the hands of a professional. You know? We're good now. So it was really exciting how that transition worked. It was just beyond what I knew to dream about before.
So did that put the pressure on you, Joe? Did she tell you that at the time?
No, it was very exciting for me because, I mean, prior to Acoustic Eidolon, I had another group that I was a part of for 14 years, and we released 13 records, and that was coming to a close when Hannah and I got together for the first time. So it was, it's been a bit of a continuation for me, but it's way more fun touring with this beautiful woman than it is with five smelly guys. It's a whole lot different thing, you know. No, it's been this will all, you know, regardless of what the future holds, this will have been the highlight for me and my own personal musical journey, that's for darn sure. So Hannah was my muse, and when we started getting together, I became so prolific and started composing all this music, and it would always happen when we were rehearsing, and I realized that she was my muse, so I had to figure out a way to get her and marry her before someone else married my muse. So it was quite a journey.
Well, congratulations on your success there. At many levels, and this is actually a very nice lead-in, talking about Muse, to the last piece that we're going to play. This is back from your CD, Friends Across the Ocean, and it's called Hannah's Waltz. Is that self-explanatory, or is there something to be said?
Yeah, it's a tune I wrote. Hannah's a very gracious woman, and this was definitely for Hannah. I wrote for Hannah an instrumental piece.
It's Acoustic Eidolon, who are cellist Hannah Alkier, and in this case, composer, and who knows which of the instruments you're playing on here, do you
Double
recall?
Double Neck Get Joe on this one.
Double Neck Get Joe, Joe Scott, and is Thomas Lefke on this one with
yes,
you?
Yes, he is.
He is.
Yeah.
On the Celtic harp. They're going to be at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. They have a music series, a free program every Thursday at noon. And they're going to be on it this Thursday. It's at the Carle Clinic campus on University Avenue in Urbana. Go out and hear them. And thank you both very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Acoustic Eidolon here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. This is Illinois Public Media. I'm Kevin Kelly, and our broadcast today is made possible in part by the Metropolitan Opera continuing its series of live opera in high definition at neighborhood theaters. On Saturday, April 23rd, the Met in HD presents Strauss's Capriccio. For more information, visit metopera.org. And we have support from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, speaking of opera, featuring the powerful fervor of tenor Ben Heppner on Thursday, April 28th at 7:30 p.m. More information is at krannertcenter.com. Next on Live and Local, we have a conversation with John Cox, who is the principal organizer of this next concert by Concerto Urbano, which is the early music ensemble at the University of Illinois School of Music. And there's two other ensembles joining that group who are new to me anyway, Concerto Urbano Vocale and the Urbana Viol Consort, giving a collection of 17th century music from German and Austrian composers, in particular, relations of the great Bach. These are sort of some of the not-so-great Bachs, in a way, at least not the ones that are better known. In fact, at least one of them I don't think I ever heard of before. John Cox is with us, and we'll hear some of the music and a little bit about the programs. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Charlotte Maddox is the official director of Concerto Urbano and directs the... Is there even technically an early music program at the university?
There is, in a sense. The Concerto Urbano is the school's Baroque orchestra, but it serves as a general, let's say, collegium. And a collegium is an old Latin word that we use to mean a group of both singers and instrumentalists who study pre-modern music, let's say music before J.S. Bach, and a lot of times Renaissance and Baroque music. Concerto Urbano has been around for a number of years, Charlotte Maddox being the director, and they specialize in Baroque music, sometimes doing operatic things, sometimes mainly instrumental. For example, last fall they put on a concert of all of J.S. Bach's multiple harpsichord concertos. This semester, Professor Maddox is directing the school's production of La Callisto, which is an opera by Francesco Cavalli, so a 17th century opera. And she's busy with that, and she was gracious enough to allow me to take over Concerto Urbano and put on a concert. So
that's what's happening.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So not only are you the principal organizer, it sounds like you are the organizer of this concert.
Yes, it's my first attempt at being an impresario, trying to gather all the forces and get everyone's schedules together.
So the Vocale, is that how you say it?
Yes, Concerto Urbano Vocale. The school did not have a standing vocal collegium or vocal choir dedicated solely to early music. And so my first semester here, I asked Professor Maddox if she would mind if I organized a small choir, 10, 12 singers, and did a number on her Concerto Urbano concert. And that went well, and so we started doing more collaborations. And this semester we have 8 singers. It's a little smaller, but for these early Bach motets, early Bach family motets, there is some evidence that some of these were done one and two on a part, so a smaller choir is totally acceptable for that style of music.
By any chance, is the Vocale at all related to your group called Vox Shambana?
Well, there is a little bit of overlap. I'd say 3 singers overlap. But otherwise, I'm trying to incorporate, because Concerto Urbano is a part of the school, I'm trying to incorporate more undergraduate students in this ensemble so they get more experienced with 16th and 17th century music.
And your opening music on the concert and our opening gambit on this portion of the show is by Johann Christoph Bach. Where does he fit into the Bach echelon?
He is a great uncle of J.S. Bach. So Johann Christoph, in Bach's family line, his direct family line, his father, his grandfather, there aren't very many composers. But if you go back 2 generations, one of the brothers, who is Heinrich Bach, Johann Christoph's father, is considered the sort of first great composer in the family line. Johann Christoph Bach, his son, who we're about to hear a piece from, wrote many pieces, I'd say 10 or 12 motets that survive, keyboard works, solo works. The interesting thing about this piece is that it's for solo voice, one violin, and viola da gamba, which is an instrument which by J.S. Bach's time, really just the bass gamba survived, but it wasn't, the cello was taking over by that time in the continuo groups. So the gamba was a bit of an antique instrument by the 1720s, 30s, 40s. This piece calls for 4 viols with the violin, solo voice, and a continuo group, which creates and it's also entitled a lamento. The text is from the Book of Jeremiah, chapter 9, which talks about I need more water because I've cried out all my tears.
Dramatic.
It's very dramatic, and you'll hear that in the music. It has quite a dark sound, and that those four gambas give it quite a low center of color.
And this is with a countertenor, Robin Blaise.
Yes, Robin Blaise, who's a British countertenor, and it's one of my favorite pieces. I was so happy to be able to put it on this program.
Well, we'll hear just a sample of it here with members of the Parley of Instruments here on Live and Local. Get a flavor of that music by Johann Christoph Bach and with countertenor Robin Blaise, the Parley of Instruments. Who's going to be singing that for you tonight?
Matthew Lees, he's a DMA candidate in choral conducting, but also has done vocal training at the Longy School of Early Music in Boston and Indiana University in Bloomington, the Early Music Institute there. So he's also a voice teacher at Millikan.
No, he's a very experienced guy. He's one of these people that comes after, gets his DMA after he's done all kinds of things.
He does have quite a professional career going, and so we're fortunate to be able to have his voice on the concert. He's singing two lamentos by Johann Christoph Bach, both for solo violin, voice, viols, and basso continuo.
Just looking at these various names of Bach family, I started to think of the family tree of PDQ Bach. And I was trying to remember some of the outrageous names that some of them have. And of course, I can't think of any of them now.
I haven't seen that in years, but I remember.
I might look it up while we listen to this next excerpt. Johann Michael, Johann Michael, I guess. But Johann Michael Bach is represented next, at least on this program. I just picked one off of here because we don't happen to have a recording of any of the ones you're actually doing on the program tonight. Mm-hmm. This is Es ist ein großer Gewinn. What does Gewinn mean? I should remember.
Gewinn is
Gewinn. I'll look that up too.
We're
kind of winging this as we go. sort of typical on this show, but this will give you an idea of Johann Michael's, and where does he fit into the tree?
J.S. Bach's
fit on the tree.
An uncle.
So the other guy, Christoph, was great uncle. Michael is
just a regular uncle.
So we're getting close. Just a regular old right. Uncle Michael. And everybody was first named Johann, it seems. So they went by their middle names pretty much.
That's correct, yes.
Including Sebastian was known as Sebastian.
I assume. Johann was such a common first name.
Yeah. John. Hasn't changed, John,
it hasn't
has it?
Changed.
John Cox, Johann Cox. All right, here's who have we got in this recording? The Musica Antiqua Ensemble of Cologne, who were here at Kranitzen not very long ago this semester. Reinhard Gerbel leading them. And you can hear some music by various Bachs on this concert tonight by Concerto Urbano. And we haven't said where so far. It's at the Chapel of St. John the Divine at the corner of Wright and Armory Streets in Champaign tonight at 7:30. Just a bit of that music by not Johann Michael Bach, but Johann Christoph Bach. I was actually looking at the listing for the wrong CD here. Sorry about that. And this comes from a cantata called Herr, wende dich und sei mir gnädig, which means roughly, Lord, turn and be merciful to me, etc., with members of Musica Antiqua of Cologne and the Rheinische Kantorei, led by Reinhard Gerbel. And you can hear music by Johann Christoph Bach and Johann Michael and Johann Ludwig and Heinrich, and also people named Froberger, Schmelzer, Rausch, and others on this concert tonight by Concerto Urbano with the Urbano Vocale and Urbana Viol Consort led by John Cox tonight at 7:30 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine. How do you keep in your head all this family tree stuff? I mean, you seem to you're not looking at any notes. You're just rolling this stuff off.
I've been really fascinated with how much J.S. Bach learned from his ancestors. We know, we know that he learned from Buxtehude and Telemann, and that he was influenced by Italian styles and Vivaldi. But there hasn't been a lot of research done, or the research that's been done is not well known, that he learned quite a bit from his uncle's ancestors. There was a book that was kept by his family members of all the greatest compositions down the family tree. And when J.S. Bach's parents died, he was quite young, in his early teens, he went to live with his eldest brother. His eldest brother was the keeper of this book at the time and locked it in a cabinet and did not allow J.S. Bach to look at it because it was very valuable. And the story goes that in the middle of the night, the eldest brother found that J.S. Bach had broken into the cabinet and was studying these compositions by moonlight. And one thinks that he did that quite a bit, because his style is, especially in the motet composition, his style is heavily influenced by that of Johann Ludwig, his cousin, Johann Michael, his uncle, and Johann Christoph, the great uncle. So I've just been doing a lot of reading and a little bit of writing about the relationship between these motets, which are 17th century, and the double choir motets of J.S. Bach, written in the 20s and 30s of the 1700s.
Of course, these days that sort of misbehavior would be greatly admired if we could only get our kids to be that diligent, right?
Yeah. Right.
Well, John, thanks for coming in for this brief chat about that concert tonight. Sounds like a great program. And any charge for it?
No, it's free.
Free concert. The Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign tonight at 7:30. Concerto Urbano. I hope you can join him for that. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Support for our broadcast comes in part from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is Illinois Public Media, WYNL FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville.